You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Times Higher Education issue review podcast for the 23rd to the 29th of July 2015. My name is Chris Parr. I'm joined by reporters Jack Grove, Holly Els and Chris Havergal. In the magazine this week, a third of English higher education institutions have cut spending on campus facilities by more than a quarter since 2008. Why have they done this and what are the knock-on effects? Chris will fill us in just a second. Could financial support for PhD supervision in universities be in line for cuts? It could be, according to the new chair of the UK Council for Graduate Education, Rosemary Deem. She's been speaking to Holly. And finally, the HE sector has taken a keen interest in what a teaching ref, or TEF if you like, that seems to be the word people are going for, what a TEF might entail. Jack's been looking closely at the possibilities. But first, Chris, our splash this week looks at how universities are cutting back, particularly since 2008, on what they're spending on campus facilities. Seems short-sighted to me. Why are they doing it?
Well, a lot of it is to do with reductions in government funding that's distributed via the Higher Education Funding Council for England. And this report, which was conducted for HEFCE, finds that many institutions have struggled to make up for that shortfall in government funding from their own funds. It's quite an interesting report because a lot of the narrative around capital spending by universities has been about overall levels of spending going up in the face of this reduction in funding. What this report does is break it down by institution and finds that, yes, it is the case that nationwide capital spending is going up, but that's being driven by a small number of elite institutions, particularly Oxford, Cambridge and Imperial College London. When you look at other institutions, spending has reduced by a quarter, a third of institutions, and a half of institutions have reduced their spending by some amount.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because students presumably always put pretty high up their list of demands and desirables when they're choosing a university, the facilities that institution can offer.
Well, indeed, and what the report finds is that institutions are probably aware of that because they're spending a great deal of money on new facilities which look good in prospectuses and take students around on an open day. It suggests that maintenance of existing buildings is sort of falling by the wayside. I mean, there are two sort of consequences of this. One is that I think the words it uses, that there's quite an uneven student experience. For example, if you get stuck in some old halls compared to some bright, shiny new block. The other thing is also the international comparison. It's one of the other things that the report finds, is that even if overall levels of UK spending are up, they're still considerably lower than key international competitors like Australia and the US.
It's a funny one, that, isn't it? The old sort of facilities. I often think they must be quite attractive to international students, particularly for English universities with big grand old buildings and grand old halls. I know Durham has a castle that students can live in, I think, in their second year or third year. And you think, from the outside looking in, that probably looks quite attractive. Maybe these students be disappointed when they end up in another plastic, by-numbers bit of accommodation.
Yeah, that's true. I suppose it depends what you're looking for. I mean, certainly one of the recommendations from the report is that HEFCE should continue to give out at least some of its estates money sort of in a formulaic fashion to universities, sort of a pot sort of allocated to universities by size, rather than having sort of competitions where it will always be these sort of brand new attractive projects which win out.
Interesting stuff. Well, that full write-up's on page 6 and 7 of this week's magazine. All our news is, of course, on timeshighereducation.co.uk as well, including, Holly, your interview this week with Rosemary Deem, the new chair of the UK CGE. She's been talking about the vulnerability of supervision cash.
Yes, so I asked her what she thought. So she's taken over the helm as the chair of the UK Council of Graduate Education. So I met her at the annual conference recently and asked her, you know, what do you think are the main challenges for postgraduates at the moment? And this was one of the first things that she mentioned, the funding crunch and what that could mean for support for PhD students at the moment. The Higher Education Funding Councils distribute a certain amount of money to universities to cover the cost of supervision for PhD students, because obviously it does require a senior academic's time and guidance, and also universities often have structured programmes in place which look at career development opportunities. So this all costs, and the argument is that unlike, you know, undergraduates where universities can recruit a huge number of students, they can't do that with PhD students, and they don't actually make any money. So this is one of the concerns, really, that BIS has to make these savings in the years ahead, and this could be one area that's vulnerable to cuts.
It's not about the money, though, is it? Surely supervising PhD students, it's a vital role, it's a service that universities have to provide to their students. It's a shame it all falls under this sort of broad brush approach to funding.
Yeah, well, obviously in an ideal world, that could be the approach that a well-funded university might take, but, you know, decisions are increasingly made around finance, aren't they? And what, there's only so many things an academic can actually do.
Mm. It says here, European lessons. In her term as chair of the council, Professor Deem hopes to look more closely at developments in postgrad education in European countries. What's that all about? What sort of lessons can we learn from there?
She talked about how sometimes the UK can be a bit complacent with its graduate education. Lots of initiatives that started here in the UK have been copied by other European countries. So the push for doctoral training cohorts, for example, where students are trained together in more transferable skills to help boost their employability, is a trend that really started in the UK. Lots of other universities in Europe have mimicked. And she says that this is great, obviously, but there are other areas where the UK could probably learn from other programmes in other countries, which perhaps get overlooked because kind of think we're really good at this already.
Indeed. Well, page 10 to find out a bit more about those aspects, where we can perhaps learn a thing or two. That full interview is also on the website as well. And one thing that was sort of developed in the UK or in England, possibly could be exported elsewhere, was the REF. That's old news these days. It's all about the TEF. It's all about the Teaching Excellence Framework, which we've been promised will be coming into force pretty soon. Jack, as with any major policy change, there's been huge discussion online, people speculating about what's going to happen, what might happen, what it might look like. You've been trying to round up some of these views and give a picture of what we can expect.
Yes, well, I've been looking at this ever since it was first announced in the Tory manifesto back in March or April, and just looking at some of the things that might, some of the metrics and approaches that might inform a TEF and how universities would be judged on their teaching and what consequence would flow from that.
Mm.
And there's just various different things I explore, things like, you know, do we need, everyone's looking at the NSS and National Student Survey and thinking maybe we could have a slightly more sophisticated survey that maybe captures certain things about learning that the NSS doesn't do that well, and looking at a US system and you know, whether their survey would give a sort of insight on student learning quality. Other ideas in the pot are things like tests to measure learning gains, so sort of value added.
Mm-hmm.
Would we have maybe sort of standardised test? How would that work? Has it worked in other countries? Just there's many ideas. Particularly interesting one is about graduate earnings. I mean, how much is the TEF really about trying to sort of gauge how well graduates from various universities do, and you know, and how that could inform the tuition fee level of that university in future.
Mm.
So there's lots of things to look at, and I'm sure the debate will rage over the summer and beyond, and this is our way of just sort of exploring a few of the ideas and whether they might be viable for the TEF.
Mm, it's an interesting, wasn't it? Measuring teaching quality has always been a really tricky metric to get one's head around. I was going to do a shout out on Twitter. In fact, I think I will, asking for people for their single metric if they could introduce and find out what people say.
I mean, I think one's quite interesting is Brazil, which has been often held out as a model for sort of measuring teaching. They have sort of entry and exit exams. And this sounded great, but then when I was reading a bit more about it, apparently Brazilian students have just boycotted these exams because they just don't want to do them, they don't believe in them. So that's something that's been put on the table, so it would be interesting to see what people think. about these sort of things.
It's true of the NSS as well, of course. I remember University of Manchester last year had problems when economics students decided they would boycott that unless certain things were added to the curriculum. Putting students in control very much. Finally, Chris, we should mention you're out of the country next week at the Times Higher Education Africa Universities Summit. It's the first one we've had. What are you expecting to take in while you're over in Johannesburg?
Yeah, it's being hosted by the University of Johannesburg, and as you say, the first one we've held, but got a really great range of speakers, including Thabo Mbeki, the former president of South Africa, and also vice-chancellors from a number of leading South African universities, but also what's good to see is leaders from universities much further afield, from places like Ethiopia, Kenya and Malawi. What it is, it's going to be a really good opportunity over the course of 2 and a bit days to bring together that group of leaders and discuss some of the really important issues facing Africa's higher education system and how that system links into the broader economic development of the continent. We'll be talking about issues like research collaboration, funding, the brain drain of South African and indeed all of African researchers to other parts of the globe. It should be a very interesting event.
Should. Chris, you'll be blogging from that event.
And tweeting too, I expect.
And tweeting too, as well as your standardised news reporting, which you would expect as well. In fact, you should keep an eye on the blog section on the THE homepage now. We've got that up and running. Plenty of comment and news there to flick through. That's all for this week's THE Issue Review podcast. We'll be back next week with another one. Until then, if you want to comment on anything you've heard, you can get us on Twitter at Times Higher Ed. You'll find us on Facebook, on LinkedIn and Google+. And of course at timeshighereducation.co.uk. That's all for this week's THE Issue Review podcast.
You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.